This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
2 in the books, that means 1 to go. 60 minutes left in the show. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5 on a Friday in the big city. Barry's in Wichita. Nick and I here in studios. We take you till 4, Blitz takes you till 7. By the way, as I mentioned, you're in the 3 o'clock hour, 3:30, Sarah Barshop, Texans beat reporter for ESPN, joins us. Also, between now and 4 o'clock, I'm going to give you a chance to win a steak dinner for two worth $100 at Tribute on the grounds of the Houstonian, because Steve is always so gracious that when he comes, he brings not only smoked crab claws, but he also brings gift certificates that we can give away so that listeners can get to experience what I'm telling you about with the Houstonian. Barry, I really have just all this remorse and regret that with all these crab claws here, you are not here to enjoy them.
I mean, look, is it a surprise that you have crabs? No.
No. But the fact that I didn't get them from you makes me feel better.
Hey, that's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Not. I'm bringing that back. I'm bringing that.
They're,
You're going to smack
tasty.
On air?
Mm, man, they're so good.
Oh, jeez. I would never eat on air. That's horrible.
You absolutely would.
Yeah, you would. And you'd burp and all kinds of
no,
other things.
No, don't you pin that AJ Hoffman stuff on me. I would never burp
on
air.
You love AJ, so you copy him.
I do love AJ, but I would never burp on air. There's no way. I have Kuth.
I don't know what you got, but if Kuth's one of them, fine.
Well, you've got crabs right in front of you, right?
Well, speaking of that.
I bet it's so good.
Believe me, whatever they do food-wise is always very good. So we appreciate
top-notch.
Steve
and whoever wins those gift certificates is lucky.
Yep, but so we'll give away a steak dinner gift certificate for $100 this hour from the Houstonian and their Tribute restaurant. So that's going to be great. Lots of other things that we're going to get to football-wise. Obviously, Sarah Barshop is going to join us to talk Texans. And then, of course, after the game this Sunday, Texans going all the way to London for that game against the Jags, and Fred and AJ are going. So we're going to have you covered here on ESPN as well. And always a quick reminder that for Game 3, there's no other place to go to listen to Game 3 than ESPN, as we're going to have Dan Shulman and the ESPN broadcast of the baseball game tonight between the Astros and the Nationals right here on ESPN 97.5 starting at 7 o'clock. So there's just a little bit of a programming note for you. We've got our final clip from our comedian of the week coming up at 3:15 from Paul Odo. So stay tuned for that coming up after this segment. And that basically is a little housekeeping that gets us back.
You know what's a cool thing about coming up here to Wichita? And I probably tell this story every time, but it's only once a year.
Is this like the Cato story? Okay, go ahead.
Oh, no, I would never do that to you. But when we get here, one of the bartenders at the club, he's also a comedian, but he works at a barbecue place here in town. And come to find out, I was like, oh, you know, you would hear him say, oh, what's the best barbecue in Wichita? And I'm like, well, that can't be that difficult, obviously. But come to find out, it's the number one rated restaurant in the state of Kansas.
Well, they only have like 10, right?
Well, I mean, there's Kansas City and, you know, they've got, I don't know, other towns. I wouldn't even say cities, but it's the number one on Yelp. According to Yelp, it's the number one rated restaurant in the state of Kansas.
Wow.
Not just barbecue joint, but restaurant.
Okay.
And what they do is every year for the comics, well, what they used to do is we would go there on Friday in the morning or in the afternoon, I should say, and they would just feed us and give us barbecue as much as we could eat. And then they would just pile it onto this big to-go tray. And we would take it back to the condo and just eat barbecue the rest of the weekend and never have to buy food. And it's really good. So that was super cool. They stopped doing that within the last year, but they still feed us. So I show up and they were like, whatever you want, as much as you want, and you just don't get it to go. But it's legit good. Like the brisket was okay, but I had like the pork ribs. Oh boy,
not comparable to Houston barbecue though.
No, and the headliner here, Rob Little, really funny dude. Fun fact, he was on the Best Damn Sports Show period for 7 years.
Really?
Yeah, and because we were talking about that, I was like, you know, I could probably get you in whatever to do, you know, the ESPN show for promotion here. He's like, yeah, I do sports, and then he was telling me about it. I was like, damn, that's cool, Rob. But he was asking about, you know, barbecue in Houston. I was like, man, next time you come to Houston, I promise you, I'll take you to Killen's. It's the best barbecue you've ever had. End of story. Like, it's I don't think I've not had, and I don't eat. I'm not like AJ where I do the barbecue tours and all that, but I've not had better barbecue than that. So I think he'll like it. Okay. I don't know.
Well, I mean, obviously.
But it's really cool that they take care of us like that.
I also saw a story on the news today that a guy originally from Spring has a Tex-Mex set up right by National Stadium that is the unofficial viewing party home of all Astros games because he's kept his loyalties to the Astros and hosts Astros viewing parties all the way through the World Series in D.C., which is very cool.
You don't say.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's some that information cool. that we can add to the Steve the Hotel guy. If you're in D.C., look for the Tex-Mex from the guy from Spring.
I murdered you on that trivia. Just murdered you.
Steve was funny, man.
Steve, yeah, he showed us a different
just
side.
Kidding. I made all that up. I was like, that is awesome. And I will say, Joel, to your credit, the only reason I knew all of those answers is because I had to research that Houston versus D.C. video.
Yeah.
And I was looking for facts about Washington and facts about D.C., and a lot of it was about the White House and presidents. So when he was like, the movie thing, I was like, ooh, I know this because I literally just read it earlier
in
the
week. I thought
you
were Googling.
So, yeah, no, that would have been good, too. If you could Google that fast, that would have been impressive.
Yeah, I just happened to know because I did that video.
So. Well, the other thing is because I cheated because I went to high school with John Quincy Adams, and his sister was hot. So I got to know far too much about the family that way. So I knew halfway through our senior year he moved into the White House. That's the only reason why I knew that.
That's awesome.
Hey, I did want to ask you guys. We didn't get to it yesterday, and I'm probably glad we didn't because it's right down your alley. But I see now Conor McGregor has come out with a press conference and said he's going to fight again. He still wants Khabib, but he's going to fight on the 15th of January in Vegas. You guys are the experts here on that. Your thoughts?
I mean, he made a little money. He's had some fun. I assume he's given his body a massive opportunity to heal up and rest. And now he wants another shot. He's going to do what he does to get the biggest and best fights. I guarantee you Khabib, that name is not going to be out of his. He's going to be mentioning Khabib, even though he doesn't deserve him just yet, the entire time. And he's going to be Conor. And I imagine him getting that fight. And if he wins, I see him going in the express lane back to the top and getting a title shot much quicker than most.
I think the question for me is, one, he's been gone a while. How is he not going to have any tune-up fights at all?
He's not going to go straight to Khabib. I think that's been established. So it is, I guess, technically for someone as big as him, I guess in a way it is a tune-up fight. Because how long has he been out?
It's been a while, right?
Yeah, I mean, his last deal, he hasn't fought since after the Mayweather fight, right?
Who, McGregor?
Or he has. That's right, he has. Well, you know, I'm an MMA expert.
No, he's fought since so his last fight was, I'll tell you right now. Because it was
October. It was a year ago.
It was against Khabib at UFC 229 at October 6, 2018.
Okay, so then let me ask you this. We talk about when someone takes any length of time off and wants to make a comeback in the major four sports. Is it the same way with MMA fighting? That you take that length of time off and you lose your edge, you lose a lot of things. Nick, you said his body's going to bounce back, but mentally and physically and being in the middle of that, can you do it take off for that long and come back and pick up where you left off?
Well, when Barry and I were going back and forth about betting on gambling, and he was saying it's much more harder now and it's more and more difficult to predict. This is a type of fight I would stay away from. Why? Because some people come back after a year or two and absolutely look like they haven't been fighting for a year or two. And then we had guys like Dominic Cruz, who was gone for 3 years, and he came back in and he fought like he just got out of a cage the week before. So it really just depends on the body, how young you are, how well you do with recovering from injury, and how mentally strong you are. And I just, you know, for him, he's not old. It's only been a year. And I've seen fighters in their 30s come back after 3 years. GSP did it too, so.
Yeah, but I think if you want to look at track record for Conor, most recently he had a layoff where he had fought Eddie Alvarez in November of 2016, and then he went on the hiatus with the Mayweather and the boxing and all that. Didn't fight again until this past October, so almost a 2-year layoff. And what did he do? He went out there and lost to Khabib. So it's been another year. That's not terrible. I mean, that's obviously not a 2-year layoff like previously, but a year's a long time to go without fighting. And you can train and you can spar and you can do all those things, but there's nothing like, I mean, when you look at some of his previous fights, he went from, you know, December 2015 to March 2016, March to August, August to November. He fought three times in 2016, and then he's fought once since then. So I it's going to be interesting. I suspect he would want to have a couple of tune-up fights before he goes after a championship again. Or after,
he says he wants to fight three times next year, starting in January. And obviously, his end game is going to be another fight with Khabib.
I don't think he wants a bunch of tune-up fights. I think fans and maybe the UFC might want more tune-up fights for him. He's already said he's eyeing Diaz and Khabib. In my eyes, the way Conor sees it is that if he gets one more W, he gets a shot at the title, whether Khabib is the champion or not. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I really believe that's Conor's mentality. I don't think for one bit Conor is thinking, oh, let me get three wins under my belt and I'll get another shot at the title.
I think what that does, though, is that allows them to rebuild the mystique of Conor McGregor because...
Yeah, it does.
You know, it was all stripped away when he just was made to look a fool in that last fight. And so, you know, he avenged, the Diaz loss. But then, you know, he looked so bad in his last fight in the UFC when he got beat by that submission that now, you know, it was like, oh, he is vulnerable. Remember, that happened to Ronda Rousey where once she lost, it was over. Like, she lost it. So I think he was probably worried about that, hence taking the year off, get himself back together. But going out and dominating some guys and rebuilding that mystique and the showmanship and all the out-of-the-cage stuff that he does is probably all part of the bigger plan to make that revenge fight against Khabib a bigger payday for everybody.
And, Nick, doesn't it, to your point, if he's only going to fight three times next year and his first fight is, we don't know against who, but it's going to be in January, and then he wants to face the winner of that UFC 244 main event between Diaz and Masvidal, that would set him up for his third fight of the year being Khabib.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's probably what should happen. I mean, it really is who you beat and how you beat him. That's kind of the biggest thing. If he goes in there, and to me, a Diaz fight kind of makes sense. It's 1-1. It's a trilogy fight. And if he goes back and he wins that, not only is it a fight that people are going to pay to see just because it's a Diaz brother, and we already lost one Nick Diaz because it looks like he had elevated levels despite the fact that he's a vegetarian, but Nate Diaz is a guy that's a star just like Nick is, and it's only going to make sense to make that fight. If he goes in there and dominates Nate Diaz, I would not be shocked if he gets a title shot in Khabib. Just because he said he's fighting three times next year doesn't mean he's waiting three fights for a title fight. It just means he probably read up or he signed a contract and he plans on fighting three times, whether it's for a championship belt or not. That's what I believe.
Yeah, but wouldn't the concern be that if he loses that Diaz fight, which is highly plausible that he does, then you lose the opportunity to have that that rematch with Khabib Nurmagomedov?
I would agree with that.
So I think the risk is get three fights or get two fights and then fight Khabib, and then if he beats them, then you go out and fight Diaz again. But I don't know if they would risk that Khabib fight with the Diaz fight, you know, because it especially making it the second fight, because it's highly likely he loses that fight especially with you know, only having one fight under his belt since coming back. So I would think you would go two, if not three fights, and then fight Khabib. And if you win that, then you fight Nate. And that's five fights and two really big paydays for the UFC and everybody else.
Yeah, I want to see how the UFC handles it. I want to see.
It's going to be interesting.
In the event that he does put together the wins, does he get it after one win? Does he get it after two? Does he, you know, like, look, I get it from a money standpoint. We get it. I mean, the second this guy starts tweeting and he starts posting on the Instagram and he's an active fighter in the UFC, it just makes MMA better. It just does. Like, the analogy I would use is Tekashi 6ix9ine in the hip-hop industry was probably, you know, I've talked to many people that said Instagram and the industry was just better when he went on that a phase of just doing crazy stuff and trolling people and talking crap to other rappers. It just made the hip-hop industry more interesting, and I think that's what Conor McGregor does. So I think Dana loves Conor. I want to see how he handles it. He has been on record saying he doesn't deserve an immediate title shot, and I think at the very minimum, that's fair.
Well, there you go. There's a little MMA news of the day that I knew the experts would have for me. So we got that for you. And we're going to continue to roll on because of the fact that we're heading up towards 3:30. And that's when Sarah Barshop joins us, the ESPN Texans beat writer. We'll talk about Texans and Raiders. Get you set up for that game at NRG on Sunday, the late game on Sunday, as we get some more eyeballs on it with more of a TV audience. So we've got that to look forward to and a whole bunch more. If you want to join the show, 713-780-3776. HR and P listener line. Call that number. Text that number. Hit us on Twitter where it's at Barry is funny, at Pac-Man Joel with a K, and at the producer Nick. We're the usual suspects. This is ESPN 97.5.
Pack it up, pack it in. Let me begin. Pack in the wind. Battle me, that's a sin. Stay up to date with the latest innovations hitting the city of Houston by visiting innovationmap.com or follow them on any of your social media platforms. Just search Innovation Map. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Most everybody's from somewhere else. I'm from Texas. Hey, all right. A lot of people don't guess right off the bat that I'm from Texas because I don't have a compulsion to yell anything when the word Texas is mentioned, which is kind of a symptom, you know. It's not you, it's most. And then I also don't usually, but I'm not always wearing this shirt. I don't really have much of an accent, I don't think. But I must be careful. And I don't lead off with my Texasness. You understand? Like, a lot of people we meet from Texas are, that's who they are. That's immediately. You know? They're like, are you standing in line at this Starbucks? It's like, I'm from Texas, is what I'm doing.
There's the final clip from our comedian of the week on an FEF Friday, F for Funny, Paul Odo. Barry gave you the backstory. It's the first guy that Barry ever hosted for, and lots of other fun tidbits that he gave you. Funny guy. If you want to check him out, you certainly can. If you missed any of it, ESPN975.com. Click on the show tab at the top of the page for the suspects, and you can catch up on the clips that were at 1:15, 2:15, and now that one at 3:15. And as promised, by the way, we said, because we take care of the suspects and because our hotel guy Steve was in today, he came bearing gifts. Not only those delicious smoked crab claws, but also the fact that he has a $100 gift certificate to Tribute Restaurant. Good for a steak dinner for you and whoever else you want to go with. So as promised, I'm going to give it away right now. Caller 14, 713-780-3776. Caller 14, you get a $100 gift certificate to the absolutely fantastic Tribute Restaurant on the grounds of the Houstonian in the Galleria on Post Oak in Houston. Good luck. There you go. Barry.
I've obviously ruffled a lot of feathers with my barbecue slander, or I wouldn't say slander, but saying that it was the best, it's all subjective, right?
Sure. I mean, you ruffle feathers. That doesn't happen often.
No, that's not a thing I do. At least I don't think I do. I mean, I could be wrong, but.
Oh, you're very wrong, but at least in your mind, we know how you think about things, so
yeah.
We just go with it.
But yes, there's a lot of good barbecue. I haven't had some of the ones. Like, somebody was asking me about Corkscrew. And I was like, no, I've never had it. I hear it's really, really good. It's obviously one of the high, but I just can't see myself waiting in line to be told that, oh, we sold out of everything. Sorry.
Well,
somebody said you got to get there at 5 in the morning. No, I'm out on that. I'll go to Rudy's. That line is a lot shorter and it'll get the job done.
Nick and I have never waited in line for barbecue for a long period of time with anybody that may or may not be the program director of this station, especially when we're on the road in Dallas, Texas. But that's another story for another day. And we don't want to bring up spilled milk and old stories. But we know he's willing to do that on two straight days when we didn't get in the first day. But
really?
Whatever.
Yeah.
We were in Dallas.
His affinity for meat is pretty sickening. He's really loves meat.
He will stand in line for 3 hours to put meat in his mouth, and he did not miss the opportunity. We were in Dallas for the fight. He really wanted to go to this place. He did not judge the time accordingly. The first day we had to leave, he was so hell bent. There was no doubt we were getting up earlier, leaving earlier, and waiting in line longer to make sure he got that barbecue. It was good.
So, yeah. Oh, well, is it worth it? Was it worth the wait?
I'm not a barbecue guy like that. No, for me, I'm not wait. I'm with you. If I gotta wait, you know, a long period of time, no, I could find something maybe a little less tasty, but a lot more convenient.
Oh, for sure. Hey, do you mind if I ask you a question about college football?
No, go ahead.
Is this the week Wisconsin gets bumped out of the top 25?
Absolutely. Yep. And Lenny.
Oh, don't be like that.
Lenny on Twitter wants to make all kinds of bets because he's an Ohio State fan. And I'm like, okay, when you're the high horse and you know that you're playing at home and the chances are really good you're going to win, he's throwing all kinds of grandiose bets my way. No, I'm not stupid, okay? This is a team that lost to Illinois last week. If this is, Barry, this is the parallel to how you feel about the Aggies. And I've said this before as well. I love it when Wisconsin's in the top 10. I wish it would last the entire season. But lo and behold, whether it's a good team or a bad team, at the end of the year, the only thing we can hope for is that they stay within like the top 20 and so that maybe some better recruits come. But yeah, I just don't see any way with the role that Ohio State's on that, and even if they have the red ass after losing last week, I don't think Wisconsin goes into the horseshoe and beats the Buckeyes.
14.5 points they are favored by the Buckeyes are.
Yeah, you
That's
know what?
A lot.
And here's
two
the thing.
Touchdowns.
Their defense is really good, but last week
but
it wasn't.
So is Wisconsin's.
Well, I'm saying Wisconsin's defense is really good, but last week it just kind of all of a sudden had one of those weeks. But now they're going to face an offense like they haven't faced all year, and Ohio State's at home. I just don't see it happening. I think they could cover, but I wouldn't bet on it.
Well, the crazy thing to me is you got a team that in Wisconsin that was just ranked last week at
six,
at number six. Yeah, so you were basically having a number six versus number three matchup, right?
Yep.
But and at the time when Wisconsin was six, Ohio State was four. So this isn't two teams a week ago that everybody thought was really close,
right?
And all of a sudden now it's two touchdowns plus because they went out and obviously crapped the bed against Illinois, and you hate to see that, but. That I don't think that material would change the makeup of this team. They had a stinker of a game against a bad team.
Unlike the Georgia-South Carolina game where South Carolina dominated throughout that entire game. Wisconsin was in the lead and in the driver's seat for most of the game. They just, in a couple of cases, didn't capitalize with the points they needed, a field goal instead of a touchdown, whatever the case may be. And then a quarterback that's only thrown one interception all year was trying to construct a ball control drive to run the clock out. He threw a pick. Illinois got a couple of big runs, put them in field goal position. They win the game. That's still on you because your defense, which was so good, wasn't playing good. But at the same time, at least they weren't dominated throughout. Illinois just found a way to win. So
yeah. Well, it's not going to surprise me if Wisconsin beats them is what I'm saying. And I realize two touchdowns is a lot.
That's a lot.
And people are looking at this. But it won't at all surprise me if Wisconsin figures it out and goes in there and beats Ohio State. Do I expect that to happen? No. But I also don't expect them to get beat by two touchdowns.
Yeah.
I think this will be a closer game than people expect.
And I hope that they can. And you know, to your point about the weekends in college football, they're getting better because we also got Auburn and LSU. I don't know who you got. I fully expect LSU to continue making a statement. They should be the number one ranked team in the country. I think LSU wins. And then the night game on Saturday night's a good one with Notre Dame going to Michigan. I just think this could be the beginning of the end for Harbaugh, as I've said to you even before the season started. I think Notre Dame goes in there and just puts a whooping on Michigan.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I don't think this is going to be close. Michigan has been very underwhelming all year.
Yep.
Here's the crazy thing. Now, Bama plays Arkansas this week.
Mm-hmm.
LSU plays Auburn.
Yep.
You have to make LSU. If they both win, LSU has to be number one, right?
Unless it's like LSU is a squeaker and Alabama wins by like 40, then you can see a case. I think, look.
Even if still beating Auburn, even if it's a one-point win, you realize they're ninth in the country.
No, I get it. I get it, right. Obviously, the rank of the opponent means something. But I'm saying the only way that I could see even any of the voters being able to sleep with a sound conscience and say, I took Alabama over LSU, if they just thumped the hell out of Arkansas – and then it's a really tight game with LSU and Auburn. And I get your point, but even still, I've said it, you know, 2 weeks ago, last week, this week, I think LSU, if they win, should be number one in the country.
Yeah, I think no matter what, if they both win, LSU has to be number one, which I hope that they both win, because if one of them loses,
2 weeks from now, we get to, on November 9th, we get treated to LSU, Alabama. So hopefully they're 1-2, regardless of who's 1 and who's 2 going into that game, because that's college football's game of the year right there. Hey, you know what could be your move of the year? If you download GetUpside and put it on your phone, yeah, you could be your own champion by using this app. Guys, that's a lot of money that you're leaving out there at businesses if you're not using GetUpside. And I've had people ask me, like, well, Barry, what's the catch with GetUpside? Nothing's free. Believe it or not, there's just no catch here. You download GetUpside and from your iTunes or Google Play Store, it's totally free. You're not committed or locked into any, you know, long term where, hey, look, if you don't like it, you just stop using it. You can delete it off your phone. You don't have to use it. There's no fees. You can get your money in, you know, via PayPal. You can get your money via gift cards, however you want to get your money out, your option. And, there's no, like, you don't, these businesses aren't charging you or anything or, you know, costing you any extra money. You're actually getting money back from them. And the reason it's beautiful is they want your business. That's why they're partnering up with GetUpside. They don't want you to go to the competitors. They want you to go to them. So this is a win-win for everybody. And trust me, I wouldn't be talking to you about this and having all these listeners sending me their success stories with GetUpside if it wasn't true. Like I've told you, listeners have sent me screenshots of $500, $300, $75, $25 in a couple of weeks. It's real. It's legit. There's actual money that you're leaving at the pump or leaving at the table if you're not using GetUpside. Up to 25 cents a gallon in gas, up to 35% cash back when you eat out using the GetUpside app. Guys, do yourself a favor right now. Go download GetUpside. Put in my promo code Barry. Start getting that cash back and thank me later.
Heisman Trophy winner and College Football Hall of Fame, Mike Rozier, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5
and on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, final half hour of the show. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. It's Nick and Joel in studio. It's Barry in Wichita, Kansas, as he gets ready to do some weekend comedy, and then he'll be back with us in studio on a Monday fun day. But for an FEF Friday, we've already had a lot of fun. If you missed anything, go back and check it out because of the fact that we had a lot of guests, a lot of special information, and of course broke down everything from the Astros. We just got done talking some college football, talked about the game last night, the Rockets, et cetera, et cetera. So, Barry, did you how were the crowds at the show last night?
Pretty good. It was ladies' night here, so
a lot of guys dressed like dudes.
What?
A lot of girls dressed like dudes or no? Wichita's got eye candy.
No. No.
Okay, that's what I meant. It's not Wisconsin, but it's close, right?
Yeah, it's not. It was okay. The crowds. They were a rambunctious bunch, but we had a good time.
Oh, good. And we're going to have a good time right now because Sarah Barshop joins us, as we promoted and we told you, the beat writer for ESPN that covers your Houston Texans. Sarah, appreciate you spending some time with us, as you usually do on Friday. Right off the top, wanted to get your thoughts on the trade this week. Gerrion Conley, a former number one pick, a defensive back for the Raiders. He adds some help to a secondary that has been definitely depleted. But your thoughts overall on the trade, what they gave up, what they got?
I think it just shows that the Texans are all in and that they believe that they are contenders. I'm sure they believe for the Super Bowl. Maybe that's not the case. But they at least think that, you know, if a team wasn't as good, they would maybe say, like, we can make it by, we can sign someone off the street. But by making this trade, they believe this year that he's really going to help them. And then I think the other thing they like is that he's under control. He's only on the third year of his rookie deal. And so they hope, obviously they've got Jonathan Joseph on his last year of his contract. Bradley Roby only signed a one-year deal. So I think it helps them not only short-term, But long term, if he plays well and it pans out that they have him under control, and then you're not going into free agency saying, hey, we need two different starting quarterbacks depending on how Lonnie Johnson plays as well. So I think it was a move they need to make. Now, whether he was worth a third-round pick, we'll see. I think some of the discussion around that has been because they've already made other trades and they've already gotten those top picks for other players. I think if this was in a vacuum, it was a third-round pick, maybe you don't mind as much. So I think it depends a lot on how he plays, whether it was worth the value, but Bill O'Brien certainly felt that that was a position that needed to be addressed, and so they went on and did that.
Well, speaking of draft picks, what's the status on Tytus Howard? I know he was questionable. Have they updated it?
Yeah, he's out. He won't play. So I wouldn't expect to have him back until, I mean, certainly after the bye, I would think. So he didn't practice this week.
Okay, so yeah, why listen to this questionable then? Is that just Bill O'Brien being a weirdo? Because that doesn't make sense.
I don't know. I think this week he was ruled out, but I could have looked at that wrong.
All right,
Will Fuller has definitely been rolled out for this week.
I was going to say, okay, we lose Will Fuller now too, again. And does that put more pressure, obviously, on Kenny Stills? He's been great when he's been on the field. You know that Deshaun has really enjoyed all the different weaponry that he's had to go to in the passing game. But how long do we assume that Fuller's going to be out with this time?
I've been told that it's a serious injury, and the fact that he didn't practice at all this week makes me believe it'll be a couple of weeks at least. I mean, I would guess certainly till after the bye if he didn't even practice this week. So I don't know if there's more pressure on Kenny Stills because Deshaun has other weapons. Like, it's not like last year when Will tore his ACL, obviously they traded for the Bears. But it's not like he doesn't have legitimate options at tight end. He has options in the running game, too. I think his offense is just built with more depth. But I do know the Texans are very happy that they traded for Stills at the beginning of the year, partly because they knew they needed some depth at this position due to Will Fuller's injury history. But they like what Stills has done this year, and he doesn't replace Will Fuller, but at least he gives you a definite number two option to hand off Hopkins.
One more injury question for you. Any update on Bradley Roby? Because that's pretty important for them to try to get some depth back into that secondary.
I don't think he'll play this week. I think maybe we could see him. I mean, maybe in London, but probably after the bye again. I think this bye will come at a good time. I mean, they're lucky enough. It's in the middle of the season. Not every team has that luxury. But I think after the bye, we could see some guys coming back after missing a game in London and having the week off.
What was the takeaway after the Colts game? Obviously, it's been a house of horrors for them every time they go to Indy, but they were in the ball game. They had their chances. Obviously, the in-the-grasp call hurt them. QT bobbling that ball that ended up in the interception that ended up ending the game. Maybe a little clock management, too. But overall, those are three things, but there were a lot of positives to take away, too. Just getting your thoughts after that game against the Colts.
I think the penalty stood out to me. You're playing well enough. You have this quarterback. You know that you can stay in any game, pretty much, because you have Deshaun Watson. And so you can't do that to yourself. You can't have false starts called on you in the red zone. You can't have penalties on back-to-back plays that takes you from, like, the 14 to, like, the 36 or something like that. I mean, they are shooting themselves in the foot. And a lot of players told me that after the game. It was like, we were in position to win it, and we couldn't get over these self-inflicted mistakes. So I think that's something they've really got to tidy up, because if you can't, how can you play against the Patriots, and even if you're playing well in all other aspects, if you're going to commit penalties and the other team isn't going to, you're probably going to lose those games.
All right, with that being said, Sarah, let's get down to it. Raiders at the Texans. Does Conley help them in terms of game planning and giving them a little extra edge that way? And how do you see the game playing out at NRG on Sunday?
So I asked quite a few people that question because I assumed the answer would be yes. Like, why would he not? Why would they not pick his brand about that? But everyone I talked to said they really just want him to focus on learning the Texans' defensive playbook, and they really haven't asked him about that. Now, they might just be telling us that. The coordinators might have just not wanted to say that they talked to Conley about it, but everyone I've asked said they're letting him focus. I think the Texans will win just because, yeah, the secondary is injured and hasn't been that good, but I don't think this is a quarterback you worry about taking advantage of that as much. And Deshaun, I mean, Carr's good, but I just think what Deshaun Watson can do to that Oakland secondary I think they're, even without Will Fuller, I think the Texans are going to have a big game on offense, especially in the passing game, but I think they'll win.
Sarah, when you look at these two teams on paper, they're really similar. You get the feel that when you watch them, that the Texans are a much better football team than the Oakland Raiders. But when you start looking at them statistically, as far as like yards passing, yards rushing, offensively and defensively, these teams are really similar. To you, what's the one big thing the Texans have to do in order to not come home at 4-4?
I think it'll be how they run the ball, because we've seen in these games, the games they've had success in, they've run the ball well, and the when they can't get that run game going, and like you said, the both teams are similar in that they both run the ball well, and they also have, both have really good run defenses. So I think whoever wins that battle, whoever has a good rushing game, I think they have a lot of success on offense in this game.
There you go, Sarah. We appreciate it, and we look forward to following everything that you write on ESPN.com, following your Houston Texans. You guys should do the same. You can follow her at Sarah Barshop. You can also follow, like I said, every bit of her work on ESPN.com. Have a great time at the game, and of course, I take it you're going across the pond next week for the Jaguars game as well, so travel safely.
Thank you very much. Great to talk to you guys.
There you go. Sarah Barshop from ESPN covering the Texans. We got one segment to go on the show. We'll get you prepped up and ready to go for the game between the Astros and the Nationals tonight in Washington, D.C. in Game 3. Maybe even a little information that we have been talking about in terms of distractions and the players and if it's bothered them all or not. Catch you up in the final segment coming up next, ESPN 97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Final segment of the show before we put a bow on it. Wrap it up and turn it over to the Blitz. They'll take you till 7 on ESPN 97.5. Fred and AJ and Aaron in the studio here. So a great way to start your weekend as you roll into Friday night and get ready for Game 3 between your Astros and the Nationals. And Barry, I don't think you even heard this yet, but we were talking about the whole backlash of all of the off-the-field incidents, you know, and everything that's happened that didn't involve games 1 and 2, and if it affected the actual team on the field, because we said it's time to focus on just playing baseball. And Jeff Passan from ESPN actually got to the bottom of some of that for us. He caught up with some of the players after the aftermath of everything that's happened, including yesterday's press conference from Jeff Luhnow. And this is his quote about what he's found out.
They know about it. And I say they know about it because after I wrote my column, I heard from 3 players saying thanks. So it's clear that they understand what happened and that they believe Brandon Taubman was in the wrong in this situation. Now, does that mean that it's a distraction? I'll be honest. Baseball players and athletes in general have such an incredible ability to focus and to clear things from their mind that I have trouble thinking that when they're on the field, that Brandon Taubman's going to be the thing that's in your head.
So that's Jeff Passan of ESPN, Barry. I would just say this. I'm sure that they're glad, regardless of whether it was a distraction or not, that it's behind them, because I think all of them are probably tired of hearing about it.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. And I do think it's commendable that the players that did reach out and say, hey, thanks for writing that, because it was ugly and we appreciate it. I tend to agree with him too. You know, I don't think that these guys are they like tired of having to answer questions or be asked about it? Maybe so, but I don't think it becomes a distraction once they're on the field and playing. All that goes away, and it's really you focused on the pitcher or the batter that you're facing at that moment.
Sure. So we've had a lot of rain here in Houston today, so I figured it would be apropos to finish up the last segment with our resident Black Cloud telling us how he sees the game going tonight between the Astros and the Nationals. So started us off for a bit, Barry. Go ahead.
Wow, I'm the Black Cloud?
I mean,
I warned you guys that game 2 wasn't a slam dunk, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I had an uneasy feeling about having to face Strasburg again. Tonight, a little bit different. I feel like this is where Zach Greinke can shine a little bit and maybe earn some of what he was brought in here to do. It's still going to be tough, man. You talk about confidence. I think one team has all the confidence right now, and another team has all the pressure on them. That's the thing, is Washington has no pressure and all confidence. And it's almost the opposite for the Astros at this point. They've got all the pressure on them. They've got to be feeling down. This is a tough team to hit. And now you're on the road where they haven't played all that great. I think that the Astros go in and win today. But I'm going to warn everybody again, I could see this series now going five and it be favoring the Nationals. This is not a good look. It's not things don't bode well for this team after dropping both of those starts. And you know, you had to at least split.
Right.
And that just didn't happen. Now you've got to go, not only do you have to go in and win at least twice in Washington to stay alive, but now you've got to beat Strasburg or Scherzer again.
Mm-hmm. That's no doubt easy. About it. But here's the thing. So I went back, and normally this is your area of expertise, but I did go back and do a little checking on Zach Greinke versus the Nationals. I don't care that he's faced him 10 times in his career. I only care about this year. He faced him once. He faced him in June, which is obviously a different situation with the Nationals scuffling for most of, through May and then starting to pick it back up. But he had a no-hitter through six. He gave up two hits through seven. He pitched seven and a third. He got the win, and his career earned run average is under a run and a half against the Nationals. But the most important thing to me is he's seen these hitters. Obviously, they've seen him too. But the fact that he had a no-no through six innings and gave up two hits through seven plus, I'll take that in terms of something to rest my psyche a little bit before I get ready for game three tonight.
Okay, but I will ask you, what is his what's his numbers against a guy like Soto, who's a young guy that he's not going to have a ton of experience against?
He did face him in that game. Soto did not get a hit off of him in that game. But again, there's another case where you get a guy that was just getting his feet wet in the big leagues and really getting comfortable, and now the team is on a roll, he's on a roll, and it's a different story. But it's a lot better than me telling you, hey, by the way, Zach Greinke's ERA is 6.75 against the Nationals this year. He faced him three times, didn't get out of the fifth inning in any of the three starts. That would be demoralizing. At least in this case, I got to believe he's got a good game plan going in. He's familiar with the hitters, and hopefully, you know, that's an advantage for him as he goes in to take on this team.
All right, so what do you think happens tonight?
I think the Astros win 4-3.
Okay. I don't know score. I mean, nothing's popped into my head. I think the Astros win if they get seven out of Greinke. If that doesn't happen, it's going to be tough.
Since we probably won't be discussing any of this, is the series coming back to Houston? Because, you know, we have games for the next three nights, and obviously we're not going to be on the air. Do you see this series coming back to Houston?
You know, I want to say yes because I picked Astros in seven, which means they're going to lose three games. But I didn't think that they would lose two of them at home to start the series. So I want to say yes, this comes back. But honestly, the only thing that keeps popping into my head is a 4-1 Nationals win in this World Series. So I'm not so sure that it happens.
Nick?
I think they're going to win tonight. I do think they're going to come back in Houston. I am a little scared now because obviously I picked them in six. I didn't pick them in seven. I picked the Astros in six. I don't know if that's going to happen. I think if the Astros are going to win at this point, it has to be in seven. I said on the program yesterday, filling in for Barry, I picked the Astros to win game one and two, and I feel like they're going to win game three. I just don't see this team being a team that's at least not going to get swept. That's what I said yesterday. I'm going to stick to it.
I'm with you. I think they come back here. I don't know if they come back up 3-2 or down 3-2. Winning all three would be a tall order, but you would have Verlander. No, you'd have Cole in game five on regular rest. Assuming they don't start him early in a bullpen, the bullpen game is the plan for game four. So I do believe they're going to win tonight. I do believe they're going to win two out of three minimum. And I said this yesterday. I really believe this team, if there's any team on the planet that's capable of having the confidence, not that they're going to do it, but to have the confidence to go in and believe that they can actually win three in D.C., but make sure that they get at least two out of three and try to change the fortunes of the team in the series, I think it's this team. We know Bregman's cocky at some point, but he's very confident. The players-only meeting hopefully kind of gets everybody to kind of get a little less of the edge in the pressing kind of mentality, and maybe they get a little bit more loosey-goosey. They've played well on the road. They get to an environment where they love having their backs against the wall and people telling them, media and otherwise, that they can't do something. And I feel encouraged that they're going to hang in this series, and they're definitely going to bring it back to Houston.
I tell you what, you mentioned it, that game five.
Yeah.
I'd be honest with you, thinking about it, I don't think it matters what happens tonight. I think Garrett Cole pitches on Saturday. I don't think you can risk going down 3-1 with an Urquidy slash bullpen start, whatever they choose to do, even if you do win tonight. If Greinke goes out and handles his business, great. Now you're down 2-1. Then you got to rely on Patrick going out and facing Corbin again with a guy with a young guy like Urquidy, or starting off with Brad Peacock and having that bullpen game. If you lose that, now you're down 3-1. So I wouldn't be surprised if you don't see Garrett Cole start game four, no matter what.
I mean, okay.
What would you do?
I think that the track record recently, including Verlander, which is top of mind with Astros fans, when you use a pitcher, even especially a power pitcher, on short rest, it's a control issue, and it can be a big problem. And I don't know that the advantages outweigh the possible issues when you're dealing with a situation like that. If they're down 3-0, then I think you just absolutely have to throw caution to the wind, and you just got to extend the series no matter what. That's the only time I would consider it. If they win tonight, and especially if the bats kind of wake up, and with their success against left-handed pitching this year in this league, I think that they set themselves up and feel confident knowing that their bullpen game against the Yankees went very well. And like you said, another key is how far Greinke goes. Because if he goes far enough that you can save the majority of your arms in the pen, then I feel like they're actually going to have confidence. One, because they're facing a lefty and they've had success that way. Two, because they've seen this pitcher before. But three, more importantly, the fact that when AJ has a bullpen game, it worked out for him that last time. And maybe that gives him even a little bit more mental a boost as they go into it. And then I think, you know, if you can get Garrett Cole in a game five and you're back to 2-2, now you could actually take control of the series while you're in Washington. So if they're down 3-0, I think you have to. Other than that, I wouldn't do it, because track record on starters on short rest, especially power pitchers, hasn't been great.
I get it, but you probably don't have a choice. And here's the other disappointing thing. Keep this in mind. You're playing NL ball. You're playing National League ball.
Right.
So the Astros lineup gets thinner, because I doubt Yordan Alvarez plays. He's going to be a pinch hitter whenever it was time to get into the bullpen.
Right.
But you're losing his bat, and it has come alive in this.
Well, I'll call you on the way home, Barry. We'll argue about it on the cell phone, because that's what we like to do. But we call it a discussion on the air, and we appreciate you guys being a part of the discussion all week, including on this FEF Friday. So we want you guys all to have a great weekend. And remember, you can always catch us every weekday, Monday through Friday, 1 to 4 p.m. right here on The Usual Suspects. For Barry in Wichita, Nick and I in the studio, we appreciate you guys. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you again on Monday. Blitz is next, ESPN 97.5.
And I didn't know if they sniffed their own farts or not.
Yeah, boy.
You can now listen to all your favorite shows on the Amazon Echo.